Welcome back. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but we're on the air, and hopefully you didn't hear anything you shouldn't have heard. Likely the final piece that William Shakespeare penned alone, The Tempest, tells the story of Prospero. Am I right on
Indeed.
That? Indeed. Thank you very much. A betrayed duke and magician bent on justice and revenge until he sees through his daughter Miranda the power of love and forgiveness. The events of the story unfold amidst the elements of the island, a perfect fit for a Berkshire evening in the open air of the Roman Garden Theater.
And Shakespeare and Company artistic director Alan Burroughs directs The Tempest and marks the inaugural production of the new Roman Garden Theater.
Very cool. Here to tell us more are company members Nigel Gore, Tamara Hickey, and Josh Aaron McCabe. Thank you very much. Is it Tamara or Tamara?
Tamara.
Tamara. Yeah. Thank you. I would think after all these years I would get
it's
it
okay.
right.
It's okay. Tam is fine too.
I will do that. That's even easier.
Then you don't have to think about
but
it.
But it's so Shakespearean. Tamara and Tamara and Tamara.
Very good.
Very nice. I'll give you that.
Really? What coffee are you drinking?
10 points to Gryffindor for that one. That is excellent. Right. So tell us about this of this production. I would look at the three of you and think that you had all had done The Tempest before. But is that true or not?
I did it once about probably 15 or 16 years ago when I played Alonso.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
But yeah,
you need to talk more.
Too much work happening.
and you had you ever been?
No, it was my first time.
And likewise, I mean, I'd seen it. I'd seen films of it. It's been around. Obviously, it's one of the more popular ones. But I'd never done it.
So let me ask the actors a question real fast because it drives me nuts as a failed student over the years. How do you remember all of those words?
Sometimes we don't.
But is it hard to memorize?
I mean, I know for me, I consider myself to have somewhat of a good memory, but I start really, really early, just trying to familiarize, just, you know, a little bit of at a time so that it's not such a blow to the system and the brain once you get into rehearsals, because you really don't have a lot of time once you start rehearsing. You've got to devote it to, you know, building the relationships, figuring out where you're going, immersing yourself in the space. So I definitely try to get a jump on it.
So you can't just look at the page and say, some geniuses can, and say, oh, yeah, well, I got that
now. Oh, God, no.
No, especially because there's no improvising, really, unless, you know, it's done, you know, skillfully.
Like it or not. Pentameter. No, it's a lot of, for me, it's a lot of work. I mean, I work really hard. For me, there's a difference between memorizing and owning. So I can sort of memorize it, but then somebody looks at me a wrong way and I lose my line, so I haven't quite owned it yet.
Well, you have a wonderful voice. Is it a radio voice? Have you been on done radio?
Well, right now. I think it's because it's early and I've only had a little bit of coffee.
And cigarettes and gin.
Exactly.
Yeah. When you look at that dynamic though, I assume then you also work off each other, right? So that'll give you the impetus that you need to get the next line out if you are struggling, which you're all professional, so you probably don't.
Yeah.
Oh, we struggle all the time. It's always a struggle. But no, that's absolutely right. You know, whatever is coming at you is really can shift, you know, whole scenes entirely. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, we did a run through in the Roman Garden on Sunday, and Tam was just bringing some new stuff, and it kind of shifted everything for me.
So tell us a little about the Roman Garden.
It's Alan decided that he would put a theater in there, and he has done exactly that, and it's really quite magical.
This is outdoor.
It's outdoor. Yeah. It's right across the lot from Founders and up against St. Martin's, and it's just beautiful.
And how do you control the mosquitoes?
You don't.
We asked them to give us a break while the play is actually on. And
they get to watch for free, so it works
out. Very nice.
How do you take care of the mosquitoes? Deet. But for the most part, I assume you all have experience doing outdoor theater, or no?
Yeah,
is this another?
I do.
Yeah. I mean, I did a little bit at Elm Shakespeare, and actually there's a former Shakespeare and Company woman now running that company in New Haven. I had a little bit of experience, but I think for Alan, too, it was he was here during the time when it was at the Mount, and for a lot of people, the memory of Shakespeare and Company at the Mount is pretty prominent and pretty special. So I think he really just wanted to, you know, once you get outside, there's something incredibly grounding too, mm-hmm. especially for this play where we're talking a lot about the elements, and then you don't have to imagine them; they're right there. You know,
and
the
do
clouds,
you have to,
the trees.
What about your voice? Do you have to do something special with it outside as opposed to inside?
Actually, in this theater, it seems like less because it's a bit more of an intimate space even than the TPP.
It travels really well, it seems like, so far.
Yeah, because St. Martin's is there, it really does pick up and ping the sound back, so it's very clear. So it doesn't require, we absolutely do not need to be mic'd, which I've always been outside. But no, it's very intimate. The cool thing about the space is that if you sit with facing St. Martin's, you know, you can see the play very, very clearly. If you have your back to St. Martin's or sitting on the side, then you get to see the whole vista. You know, you get to see the mountains and the sky. I mean, it's really quite stunning.
I get it. But you have on a couple occasions now mentioned St. Martin's. And while there may be very few people who haven't been to Shakespeare and Company, could you explain what St. Martin's is?
It's the big old yellow building that you see as you walk right in the front, and the theater backs onto the left-hand corner of it.
So we're actually set up in the round, so the audience is all around us.
So it's a sort of a replica of the way that Shakespeare used to be?
In a sense. I mean, and we're also, one of the really cool things about it is because we perform at 5 or 5:30 every night, and it's like Nige said, it's an intimate space. The audience all sees each other throughout the whole show. They're not sitting in a dark theater where they're just sort of watching actors on stage. The audience in the round, in daylight, gets to see each other, and it's like we're all kind of going through it together.
So was Shakespeare a misogynist?
Damn.
Where's Tina? You didn't invite her.
Could you pass a scone, please? Haven brought the scones. Do we have any of them?
So, because they were all males, of course, back in the day, and now you're
on
a female playing a male part.
Yeah. I mean, it's Ariel. Sometimes, I mean, obviously was written as a male, but only men were able to perform back then, I think. And she and he, I call her she now because she is often played as a woman. So obviously, as I play Ariel, I don't think Shakespeare is a misogynist because it's a pretty powerful role in the play in terms of what I get to do.
There was a good provocative question.
There was.
And a very safe answer.
Yes. Deflected very nicely.
Thank you.
Again, 10 points to you. Now,
Tina would say that he is so much in touch with his feminine side that it's not possible for him to be misogynistic. He will give you various viewpoints, but no, he was not a misogynist.
As a company, you sit down with Alan, and you say, all right, this is what we want to discuss. This is what we want to do with this production. So bring us into that room as to what this play is about and what ultimately we as an audience, what you would like us to get out of that experience.
Well, first of all, that doesn't happen. There's no One of the things that Alan does that he introduced at his old company, Actor Shakespeare Project in Boston, is on the first day, which I call often the first day of school because there's a lot of nerves and you kind of have to just get through it and then you can start. We all just get up and put the play on its feet and do a run of the play. That's the first thing we do before we do any talking or figuring out or analyzing of the script. And really, as we proceed through the rehearsal process, a lot of that analysis happens in the moment as we're working.
Wait, I don't understand.
So there's no quote-unquote table work. There's no sitting around a table, reading the script, dissecting it in sort of intellectually.
Is that rare?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so what do you lose / gain from that process as opposed to the typical process where you kind of talk about what direction the play's going to take?
It gets in your body straight away because you're up on your feet saying the words, and I think we can sit around a table and discuss intellectually millions of points about the play, and I find it stays like a lump on the table. Right. When you start using your body, then you start to retain the information, and it's just a very different experience.
And then we end up talking about what we need to talk about in the moment, and not necessarily a bunch of superfluous. Superfluous?
Yes.
I made up a word.
Superfluous. Whoa, that's good.
I'm putting an opinion onto that word.
Superfluous. Yeah. Have you guys ever tried to figure out, by survey research or anything else, whether most of the people who come to see things are English majors? In college,
Are you asking if we think they are?
Yeah.
I don't know if there's been a study done for that. But I think the beauty of this production...
Any misogynist English majors?
Yes. Intellectual misogynist. I think the beauty of doing a play like this is that... and I think one of the reasons it's done so often and beloved is that it's a very economical story. There's not a lot of superfluous storylines that you need to hang on to and figure out. There's not a lot of history. It's pretty straightforward. It's on an island. So there's a very contained space. Yeah. It's, you know, the former Duke. It's a story about two brothers.
You just made a fist. I just want everybody on the other side of the radio to know that.
Yeah. Don't mess with
forceful.
Yeah. So I think there's, and the magic, you know, there's something simplistically alluring about the story that you don't, it requires a lot of suspension of imagination like a lot of his plays do, because we're often dealing in this play with illusion, what is real, what is magic. The characters in the play, as they come onto the island, all enter into these various states of disillusionment, because there's so much magic that Prospero and Ariel are enforcing in terms of the story of revenge, if you would. So I think there's something very inviting about the play. You don't have to know a lot to have a good experience.
So people keep showing up on this island?
Well, there is a shipwreck. Mm-hmm. And it starts with a brilliant storm. That's the other beauty of this play. You know, we start with a great...
a good storm will get you there every time.
Oh, yeah.
A
tempest. Yeah.
I was, of course, thinking of Gilligan, but what...
It was initially a three-hour tour.
right, when weather started getting rough. I just want to get back to, for a second, this idea of talking about the play beforehand, only because I just thought of this question. I was reading the New York Times over the weekend, and they had a great article in the Times about talkbacks. And they were asking writers and directors if they like them or not. Our producer, Sarah, and I don't like them. We don't like them. So I want to ask you, with what you just said about the front end of working on talking about it, and as you say, you get the opportunity to get up on your feet. Mm-hmm. So then you're up on your feet, you're doing it, you go out in the performance, and then do you do talkbacks? You won't do them.
It kind of depends on the show. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't.
So if you do them, do you benefit from that experience, or is it just loathsome?
I actually enjoy it. I enjoy folks' questions. I enjoy their point of view. I don't necessarily always agree with it, but then they don't always agree with mine.
And they are English majors.
Some of them. We haven't done a poll.
But it must be somewhat disheartening to see Alan get up on his feet as soon as the talkback begins and leave. I mean, that's almost rude, isn't it?
We haven't experienced that.
Oh, I see. That's a good point.
Because it seems like the counter to that often is that let the work speak for itself. Let the play speak for itself. Let what is being left on that stage stay, and let that be what you talk about in the car, as opposed to what you as the performers, what you as the director, what you as whoever, whether you're the playwright, not in this case, of course, but thought about and what they're trying to say.
Sort of in the vein of getting up on your feet on the first day, part of why I think that's a helpful exercise is that it allows, what sitting at a table does is prevents the actor from confronting the fear of getting up and not knowing what they're doing. So by getting up, you sort of go headfirst into that fear, and you're able to experience the play as opposed to intellectualize the play. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes at a talkback, the audience is trying to do the same thing. I want to try to understand this, but oftentimes the residue that a play leaves on an audience member has less to do with comprehension at an intellectual level, more to do with having an actual experience, which is what we hope. And in the theater, it is about that, you know, having this exchange of breath, so to speak, as alien as that may sound, that they're actually having a physical experience that they may not be able to articulate. And that can be as profound as whatever sort of unlocked in their brain.
You should bottle that. That's a great answer.
It was very.
That's a really good answer.
I hope this got recording this live.
By the way, also, and we are recording it, and great use of the word residue. I'll give you credit for that. That is,
and anybody could hear this, right, Joe?
That's right.
WMC.org.
By the time the show is done, then it'll be actually posted to the website.
I will have written my first book.
And you will.
It's an ebook.
Yeah. It'll be
small.
Later today because our producer is with us here and miles away from the central office.
And you can send it to your friends and relatives.
Yeah.
That's right. And say, this is the brilliant thing I said.
Look how smart I am. And I'm sitting in a chair at a table.
There you go. Oh, we've got to rethink everything now.
So Tempest is up. You're going to be doing this through September 3rd. What else will be happening? And are you all, is this all you're doing for the three of you, or are there other things that you will be involved in throughout the season?
We're doing Cymbeline right now. Tina and I are doing Women of Will on August the 27th, which may very well be the last time we do it, but that'll be fun. What else are you up to, Josh?
Cymbeline. The three of us are in Cymbeline. In fact, almost all the cast is in both Tempest and Cymbeline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we have one more week of that. And
so Roman Fever, the Edith Wharton comedies just started rehearsal today, so that'll be the next show that's up. And then there's, of course, in August on the Fridays, the Storytellers and Songwriters, where you'll see the One People show with musicians coming onto the property for the first time. Midsummer Night's Dreams continues through August 19th. That's happening at the Mount. And then God of Carnage is the last play in the season. Alan will be in that, as well as Elizabeth Asmalieder, Jonathan Croy, Kristen Wold, long-term company members.
Great company. Well, Shakespeare and Company presents The Tempest in the new Roman Garden Theater through September 3rd. Shakespeare.org for more information. Tam, Josh, Nigel, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank
have
you
a beautiful
very
time.
Much.
Thank you.
Really very special having you with us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC. We'll be back more from Tanglewood after this.